This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Last year, world leaders from 195 nations signed an historic climate change agreement in Paris. They developed a blueprint for reducing carbon emissions and voluntarily pledged to do their part to limit the rise in global temperatures. But, of course, there are still a lot of details to work out in terms of creating standards and then developing the financial and technical resources that would be needed to help countries achieve them. And that is what is on the agenda at this year's UN Climate Summit, now underway in Marrakesh, Morocco. Triad-based climate reporter Justin Catanoso will be heading to Marrakesh later this week, and he joins us now for a preview of the conference. Justin, welcome back to the State of Things.
Hello, Frank.
Start by reminding us what happened in Paris last year.
Well, it's a lot like what you said. It was historic in an epic sense. So the UN has been having these climate summits for more than 20 years, and they've never been able to come to an agreement on what exactly to do about global warming and climate change. And so last year was the first time that 195 nations agreed, as you said, to voluntarily do their part to reduce their carbon footprint. Now, again, voluntary is the key thing. And the other thing is it's still pretty vague in how to get there. The thing that they agreed on is that we have to keep temperatures from rising another 1/2 degree Celsius by the end of this century. We've already warmed 1 degree Celsius in the last 100 years, and you can see the impact that we've had as a result of that.
We're going to talk a little bit about the details that they have yet to work out, but let's take one step back and talk about what's at stake. If things go up 0.5, half a degree Celsius, what are we looking at in terms of what's happening now and the potential impact of letting things go the way they're going now?
Well, we've been seeing it, and it really is shocking that people aren't making these connections. But, the easiest thing to see is the polar ice caps that are melting. The Greenland ice sheet is coming apart. As our oceans warm, they expand, and we see sea level rise along all our coastal nations. But Miami Beach and Charleston, South Carolina, I mean, they flood every day at high tide. They don't need a storm. You look at the storm that we had in Louisiana a couple months ago where you got 7 inches of rain in an hour. Those are becoming common events. And then we have drought in different parts of the world, not to mention California, sub-Saharan Africa, Syria. We have refugees that we think are all being caused by civil war, but a lot of refugees in the Middle East and in Africa are actually being driven by climate change. And those things are only going to get worse unless we slow down the rate of warming that we've been seeing over the last 15 years.
Which means doing something about emissions. Human-generated carbon emissions are contributing to the accelerated pace of global warming. Talk about where those emissions go right now and what the how they divide.
It's a great question, Frank, and people need to understand that when we burn fossil fuels, they can only go in three places, and two of them are bad. So if they go up into the atmosphere, 44% of carbon emissions go up into the atmosphere, and it increases sort of the blanket effect of the greenhouse effect, and that drives up temperatures. About 26% of carbon emissions are absorbed by the oceans, and that's why we see our coral reefs suffering, and that's why we see the oceans expanding and sea levels rising and Arctic ice melting. But 30% of carbon emissions go into our forests and go into the ground, our farmland, and that's where we want it. Our tropical forests actually act as sponges, and they hold this carbon in their limbs, in their leaves, in their trunks, in their roots, and in the ground, and it acts as food. And so for the first time, the Paris Agreement actually talks about the importance of forests, slowing down the rate of deforestation, growing back more forests as a way of having a greater sponge so less of this carbon goes into the air and into the ocean.
That's an easy observation to make, but when it comes to who is going to allow forests to grow and who can exploit them for economic gain, that becomes the question of the day. I suspect at Marrakesh, some of the details that they're trying to work out, what's on the agenda there?
Yeah, so it's so tricky, Frank, because what you see, particularly in developing nations like Indonesia, like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, like Peru, for example, these are countries that have that are rich in tropical forests that the world needs. But underneath those tropical forests are natural resources, whether it's natural gas or oil or precious metals, and these countries want to exploit those resources just like we've exploited our resources in the United States. So there are these mechanisms that they're putting into place, and they're funds that they're creating. One of them is called the Green Climate Fund, and it literally will pay a country like Brazil or Peru to keep 1 million acres of tropical forest standing rather than cutting it down for ranching. And they'll get paid for that. They'll get an incentive to keep their forests standing, and then whatever country is making that donation will get a credit. It's very tricky, and how you measure this stuff is very tricky. So these are the nuts and bolts that are playing out in Marrakesh right now.
Also, a lot of discussions about loss and damage and how to support countries suffering from disruptive disasters that have already taken place because of climate change. Tell us more about that.
So this was sort of a new catchphrase that got into the Paris Agreement. So this goes beyond mitigation, which is reducing carbon emissions. It goes beyond adaptation, which is adapting to climate change by moving toward wind or solar or nuclear energy. This is stuff that goes beyond what you can fix. And so just think of Haiti and the damage that Haiti sustained as a result of Hurricane Matthew. Because those winds were so strong, there's actually an insurance fund that enables Haiti to make a claim, and they're getting money from it right now. But there's very little money right now that's in a pool for loss and damage to countries like Haiti, like the Philippines, like Malawi, which has had drought for years and years and years, to pay them for these losses that they're having. So another big discussion is, where are we going to come up with the billions to take care of this loss and damage to our most vulnerable nations?
Well, I mean, that is an interesting question. Obviously, over the last 500 years, the devastation that this economic pattern has created on the planet is what got us here. But the reason you do that, the reason you exploit without thought to the future, is because there's actually a financial payoff. How do you then, in this same economic climate, this global economic climate that got us here, that uses exploitation and profits by it, say, all right, we're actually going to generate income by not exploiting these resources? Where is that money going to come from?
It really falls to the developed nations. It falls to the developed nations. It falls to big businesses and big corporations. Look, we all have a stake in this, Frank. We all live on this planet. It's one of the things that the Pope tried to get across a year ago. This is our common home, and we need to take care of it. So there's this appeal to the wealthy nations to do their part, to make sure that developing nations can continue to develop. But they might need help building seawalls, or they might need help installing solar panels or wind energy or nuclear power plants and moving toward renewable energies, as we all have to do. There's something of a moral argument here because we all have something at stake. But you make an excellent point. China, 15 years ago, was not the world's leading emitter of greenhouse gas emissions. It is today. And in the process of doing so, it lifted 300 million people out of poverty by burning fossil fuels. They know they can't do that at the same rate that they've been doing because their pollution is so bad. But they still want to develop because they want their people to have jobs and they want their people to have decent qualities of life. So it's a real conundrum. There are no easy answers coming out of America.
There are some major players with vested interest in all of this who will also be at this conference making their case heard as well, right?
Absolutely. And so this is a year where the fossil fuel industry and the coal industry, they can see the writing on the wall. Paris puts us on a path of a zero carbon future. And there is this general belief on the part of the oil industry and the gas industry and the coal industry that they may be leaving two-thirds or more of their reserves, of their investments, in the ground because it's not profitable for them to drill it and bring it up, and because the Paris Agreement doesn't want any of that stuff being burned. And unless we have technology like carbon capture, which we don't have yet, which is extraordinarily expensive, these companies are all going to have to transition to something else. They're going to have to transition to renewable energy companies. But there's this fear. There's this fear that they're going to continue the denial that they've done over the last 20 years and keep progress from being made. So there are watchdog groups that really are going to blow the whistle on the fossil fuel industry if they try to undermine the spirit of the Paris Agreement.
You talked about the complexity of all of this. I can't imagine it really gets thrashed out among 100 representatives from 200 countries or so in a week. How much of this stuff goes on behind the scenes all year long within a country and between countries?
Well, it is a constant process, and there are a variety of meetings. Like, there was a mid-year meeting in Bonn, which I attended. But a lot of it is just sort of setting the table for what happens at the end of the year. And so that's why Marrakesh is so critical, and that's why so many important decisions are going to come in the next 2 weeks.
And obviously, local politics in each of these nations plays a big role in what actually happens when these representatives go back. It's interesting to think about that. This is election day, obviously, in this country, and you've been hearing from reporters in Marrakesh already. Talk about concern. You know, should Donald Trump be elected president, he's already talked about abrogating our responsibilities to and climate change agreements should he become president. Is there any talk about this at the conference and what that means?
You know, a good friend of mine, Eric Lyman, who writes for USA Today and for Bloomberg, actually has a story today about this. And he's been talking to a lot of the negotiators. There's an enormous unspoken fear about a Trump presidency and what it could do to any progress that we're making in terms of climate change mitigation. But there are a couple of things to keep in mind. One of them is that the Paris Agreement went into the effect of law in an unprecedented time. It went into global law on November the 4th. Any country can pull out of it, but it's going to take 4 years. The other thing is the U.S. is a real outlier when it comes to climate change policy. Everybody else is on board. There will be a lot of pressure on the U.S. to continue to do its part to reduce its carbon emissions, to innovate, move toward renewable energy sources, even if there is a Trump presidency. And there are lots of things, whether it's trade or military access or energy policy, that can really force a Trump administration to stay the course.
All right, Justin Catanoso, always a pleasure. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Frank.
Justin Catanoso is a climate change and environmental reporter, also a professor of journalism at Wake Forest University. You can find links to Justin's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, serial killers and adoption, just some of the themes and films we will preview from this year's Kookaloras Film Festival in Wilmington on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Do stay with us.